pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Establish quorum.
Russ Snow.
Jim Fleming.
Louis Ward.
Tom Weller.
Linda Johnston.
Arlo Ferdy.
Wayne Bart.
All righty. Has everyone had a chance to read the minutes? Motion to accept them?
I'll make that.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Good to go. So, first street landscaping and lighting design, first draft.
This one.
Did I?
Sewer.
Sewer water.
Number five.
Oh, I'm looking at last.
It's a new year.
It's a new year. Sewer water system master plan update.
Good, I thought maybe we needed to leave.
But we already went by it.
So we got Brad Baird here from, he's the head, or the, you're the managing partner, I guess, president of Anderson Perry. If you guys can come up here and spend some time on, this is kind of the ground. We got a couple grants to study our master plans for sewer and water and to look at the Kegel area and that whole area. We added that in to kind of update, see what it would cost, capital construction, and then look at the system as a whole. So we got out of the about $45,000 worth of contract, 40 of it came from a grant we applied for. And so we put out $5,000 and he'll tell you about it and ask lots of questions and learn.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your time on the agenda today. And we'll go through this as quick as we can to not bore you too bad. What I'd like to do real quick, though, I've met some of you, but I'm Brad Baird with Anderson Perry. This is Brandon Mahon, an engineer with Anderson Perry as well. And we are an engineering company, in case you didn't know the history on us. We've worked for the city some already on your Wiki Up list station and then evaluating industrial fire flows in your industrial park. But we've been in business for 40 years, based out of LeGrand. We have about 70 people. And a lot of engineers and surveyors and biologists and all the people needed to make projects go. We are in the process of opening up a Central Oregon office. We have about a $9 million wastewater improvements project with Primeville that's going to start this year and probably take 2 years if all goes well. So we're going to open up an office here in the next 2 to 3 months, depending on location and all that. So we'll be down here and accessible quite a bit more. And so we'll be in the area. We're looking to expand into this area and appreciate the work we've got from Lapine and enjoy working with Rick and Scott. And there, got the perks in for you guys.
Yes.
Anyway, we appreciate everything. And wanted to go through real quick these studies that Rick had mentioned. You have some studies in the past for both your water and sewer that are somewhat recent, but they're dated a little bit. Things get dated with construction costs. I've been doing this since the early 1990s, and it's been interesting to watch how inflation affects things. And as an example, from 2003 to 2007, it was just rampant, and all the engineers' estimates couldn't keep up with the costs of projects, and bids were happening, and the engineers didn't have enough money in there, and people were scrambling to find money. And recession hit, and then it just incredibly flattened off for 2008, 9, and 10, and 11, and people had all kinds of money to do projects that were funded based on a 2007 estimate. So it ebbs and flows and goes up and down. So it's good to update these studies. And so what the scope involves is updating both your water and sewer studies to take a good look at your systems with an...
I might just add, population would be the other, because anything that was built in 05, 06, 07, guess what they were projecting?
Yeah, exactly. Same. Good point. Thanks, Rick. Yeah, the same thing is going on with population. And some of that dived off with the recession, people not moving around and things. So be good to look at that again. The emphasis for both water and sewer will be on the Kegel neighborhood, too, to to see what the impact on your systems will be to bring all of those users in and connect up. I like the format of the Lapine having a public works committee. Not all cities do that, but when we do studies, it's very good to have work sessions with the council. In this case, I think it would be this group, probably, of how you're laid out. But it's very hard to go through the alternatives and ideas and concepts on your water and sewer at council meeting, because you usually have a tight agenda and not adequate time to ask good questions. And we've completed a lot of studies for, you know, most cities in Central and Eastern Oregon, and the ones that are the most successful are when you have a group like this that's highly engaged. Because we as engineers, I mean, we can come up with 10 ways to do something, but you might only like two of them. So being engaged with you and making sure it's the right fit for your community and for your operator and what you want to run and things of that nature is very critical. So normally we have at least two work sessions in a study like this. And what I'd like to do is pass out the schedule that we attached to the agreement real quick and just talk about how this would go and see if you all have any comments or concerns. But normally, and we're in the getting the agreements finalized. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, we're waiting for
right now.
Just adding on from an agreement we had with Jeremy's, should have that. I'll email him now.
Yeah,
it'd be nice.
So normally what you do in studies of this nature, because it's been a little while for your water and sewer studies, is you get a lot of information from the city, get that done in February, just to get your water demands, water flows, sewer flows, quality data from your sewer system, things of that nature. You go through quite a period evaluating that, and then have a work session. The initial work session with the council, probably in March, or I'm sorry, with this group, where we would talk about everything we learned, and that sets the design criteria, and that's pretty important to set, as Rick mentioned, your population. These studies typically cover a 20-year planning period, so where do you think your city will be in 20 years? And that's a serious crystal ball thing, but it's a good exercise to go through and have a basis for your study. You know, how many people, what's the area? Lapine's an interesting situation. You have plenty of area to expand, obviously, and so I don't think it would be hard to accommodate a lot of people. So there'll have to be a limit. If you can imagine, if you do the study and look at serving, say, 5,000 people as an example, it's pretty hard to do a project and pay for that with only 1,700 people. So you have to find a balance between what's affordable and realistic versus what, looking at enough far out into the future. So the first work session would be to establish your population growth and your service areas and how your systems work now, their capacities and what they can do. Once all that baseline data is set, then we go back and evaluate alternatives to look at, what improvements do you need, assuming you do. Some of your components of your system might be fine. It's hard to know until we get into it and study it, but look and see what you need. Again, a lot of that will focus on Kegel area, which obviously has water and sewer needs. Then we come back at the second work session, in May or June, and sit down with you and go through, hey, here's the alternatives and ideas we've developed. And we'd be working with Rick and Scott in the interim on those. They'd be heavily involved in steering that direction as well. And then, assuming you like the direction it's going and agree with the alternatives, then we'd wrap it up and you'd have some studies done by this late summer and get them into agencies to review. These schedules can always be expedited, but it takes time to appropriately evaluate these things.
And our grant has to be done about then.
Does it?
Yeah.
Excellent.
So you can't take longer.
So
I mean, we can get an extension, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And then we could expedite this, too.
I think they put it down as like October or something. Mm. I don't know how.
Good. I prepared this without talking to Rick, so I guess we're on the same page. and good. We can only speed that up a little if necessary. So it's just good to allow adequate time for the Public Works Committee to study these things. So that, any questions on that? That's a typical study, and it won't just focus on Cagle though. It's, we're going to look at the entire city and make sure you have enough water supply, things of that nature. You don't want to get in a situation where your wells are overworking or you don't have any backup. And
one thing I kind of have to look into is this whole water supply, the maybe, the, in other words, we use X amount of water, but water rights for X amount.
Are we okay?
There's an unused part. How much should you have unused? You know, we don't want to use 99% of your available water.
Right.
That doesn't work. Well, should it be 80%? And then the other thing is the vacant lots are committed. In other words, you could go to Huntington Meadows and all those vacant streets in there. Well, someone could build a house tomorrow. We can't take that water and give it to someone new, and then they come to build a house, and you literally have no water for them. So you have to actually kind of figure out the lots that are existing.
Well, and a lot of that isn't Crescent Creek going to be upwards of 1,000 more?
Well, yes, over
but they're guaranteed your water too.
Yeah, no, and you do. That's what you kind of have to look at, the growth rate, and then kind of you guess how much you would need over the next decade or 20 years, and then, I mean, it's we'll see how far
it's a tough exercise, because I've seen it go both ways, because cities will be growing significantly, and they want to plan for 5,000 people, as I threw out for your example, and really hard for 1,700 people to pay for that. So you try to find, okay, in those cases, sometimes you'll stage it. You know, we'll do this much, and that'll get us to, say, 2,500 people. And then when you get there, you have 700 more users, so you can afford to do the next increment. So you do that very thing, and you decide, you know, Rick, I heard him say in 100 years, but, you know, so you try to find what your growth will be in just 20 years and find some equilibrium. And it's a hard exercise, especially in an area like this that's got a lot of potential, being this close to Bend and a lot of people not having a problem commuting. And
we're still pretty seasonal here, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a much bigger influx in the summer, and then a lot of people take off in the winter. So your supply and demand is going to vary quite a bit.
Part of what we want out of it is a little bit, do you know what this, kind of what we have to play with? So if you get this large industrial, you take a Biogreen, where they consume a significant amount of the water. It's not so much, I mean, the residential will go, and we can figure, but it's just, what is our extra capacity that we feel comfortable, you know, next year or two, making available for the industry?
Yeah.
We've had a couple other little calls, those little, we got an agreement, although you don't know if it'll ever happen, with a data center. You know. Well, they need X amount of gallons. So you just want to kind of see what's out there. Because if we go, in the case of Biogreen, we're at several hundred gallons a minute, it's doubles what we currently consume. One customer said, if you make that available to them, what does that do?
Right.
Well, we don't have a good number on that.
Right.
So we need to know what's left out there.
Yeah, and these studies will give you that. Plus, you want to look at backup, too. It's one thing to say you have 500 gallons a minute, but that means your well's got to be running. It's got to work. Nothing breaks. You know, so what kind of backups do you have in place, and reliability and redundancy? So we'll look at
one thing I want you to make sure we look at, you saw a little bit, is that our storage is basically out there. We've got the tank there behind the public works, but most of you don't know there's a gallon of water in it. And since I've been here, there hasn't been used really for quite a while. And so there's some repair issues, but I always worry about if there was a break, we have no storage in town, and you need a day, I'm nervous about that. Him and I have talked a little, and it's got some valving and some other issues. Now it's sat there, it probably needs clean. It needs treated, spray painted, whatever. So next could be 50 or 100 grand, 200 grand in a tank that size. So we do want to do, because I worry about, it's unusual not to have storage in closer to the community. It's miles out.
Yeah.
And most places would have water. Wouldn't they have a tank there, and then they'd have one in? But maybe not. See,
well,
I don't know.
It just depends. That a lot of cities prefer some redundancy, but again, it becomes what you can afford. Your susceptibility is that, you know, one transmission line.
One line and one tank are all out there.
Yeah, and the tanks rarely have issues. It's the transmission lines. But, you know, if it has an issue, that who cares how big the tank is? You can't get it to town if the transmission...
Well, that's the problem. If you have a town, you can work on the pipe and draw off the tank.
Right, give yourself
But if your tank's out there, the line goes out, then...
Yep.
So that's, we got the tank sitting there. I just want to know, should it be operating? Do we need to, over the next few years, get it back going again?
What would it take?
What would it take to do that?
Study, we'll definitely look at that. And Scott will be heavily involved in those kinds of discussions about what he wants for the system, and then that all be brought to you folks as well.
I'd like to see just a real simple, short history about our water source. I mean, there's all kinds of things, and people tell me, oh, we've got enough water, we could take 50,000 people here. Well, water is a big issue, and it's a really big issue in other states. And, you know, I hear this is pristine, it's an artesian well. We don't need to know where it is. I'm not sure we should, but I mean, what is it? What's the quality of it?
Yeah, is there enough of it?
Is there enough of
it?
Because people don't realize we need to be looking for some water rights. I didn't know that till they told us, you know? And just a general one, not an alarming one, because I'm in full agreement with Rick and Scott that people, and I'm the only one I think that, that's serviced by the water and sewer inside the city. You know, the water comes out for my coffee in the morning, and you can flush the toilets, and that's just really
out of sight, out of mind.
I think you're absolutely right. Who worries about these things until the water rates go up, or you have a frozen pipe out in front, and, you know, then it becomes a big issue.
Right, and that's, you're hitting on exactly what these studies do. They lay out those issues, and then you decide which ones do we want to address. Because obviously, the more you address, the bigger the price tag. It's a given.
But don't you think a big selling point would be how pure this water is, if in fact it is, it's magnificent.
Mm-hmm. groundwater sources are generally always the best for purity.
And we don't put anything in it.
Yeah.
We've got to protect it and all that. Because that sounds good when we're selling rate increase.
The other thing is we've talked about is knowing the capacity. What is the capacity of our treatment plant?
Yeah.
You know, updating.
Yes.
You know that. But when in the way we are taking in
septic tanks.
Yes. The septic. Well, first of all of you should have to be there and watch that happen.
Is that necessary?
All of you should have to be there, because if you watch this thing happening and afterwards, we can't do that forever, is my thought. And so we're taking, but right now they come from Bend all day long. Well, that tells you something. If they can drive the truck from Bend, why are they doing that?
Septic.
What truck? What
are septic.
Septic haulers. We have one company that comes.
Allow other septic people to dump it out.
Why do we do that?
We take in about $50,000 a year.
It's not a whole lot.
Well, we only take in 400, so I mean, it's actually a decent percentage. But yeah, that's what we want to look at.
How you doing, Brad?
Are we thinking if we have a problem, we've got to cut them off?
Yeah, what we really need to do in the study is look at the impact to your systems.
Exactly.
In terms of the BOD and TSS and all these acronyms, but what it means to your lagoons, and make sure you're taking in enough money to justify that. Without studying it yet, because we haven't started, if a septic company can drive from Bend 28 miles to La Pine, then you're not charging enough compared to what people are charging up there.
Especially if you go up there and dump and hit it.
Well, but if our system can handle, I mean, if the system's built for a town of 6,000,
and you can handle it,
that's just extra capacity.
Sure.
Use it.
You just got to make sure
we're still there. In other words, we're there, so that it actually is its additional customer. It makes good sense. But we have to know, are we charging enough?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And so if we raise the rate, they might come, they might not. We just need to know about it.
Yeah.
We need to know.
It needs to be worth your while.
That's a key statement he made, is if they can come down here and dump cheaper than they can in their own town, then we need to look at our rates.
Right.
Yeah, and we still may be cheaper because of ours is a whole different kind of system than Bend's. Bend's is obviously, you know, you're in a tight city, there's all kinds of different things. But anyway, we do want to know.
Yeah.
We want to know how much capacity we have there.
Right.
And how much we should take in, what we should charge, what we take in, and the impact it has.
It might be fine, but it certainly needs looked at, because that's a pretty concentrated hit to your system.
But how we do it, I think, is what part of it too. It needs, if we need a new system there, how we take it, and then that needs to be correlated into those costs. Right now, the way we have to do is very manual labor, ugly, dirty, dumping with shovels into garbage, basically East Hardware plastic garbage cans, and then those are lifted by these guys up into dumpsters, like you would get a garbage dumpster, and I mean, it's terrible. And then those are then hauled, we haul it, right?
Yeah.
We haul it down to the county landfill.
We tried real hard to get a local garbage company to do that, and they won't. They do it. I mean, garbage gets hauled from treatment plants in every city in America, except La Pines, I guess.
So I think, you know, there's some more automated ways to do it. And if you can price it accordingly to where it's covered by those folks who are bringing it in. But not, don't worry about it. Don't get hung up on Bend. All these areas in South County are all these septic trucks. You got three or four companies in town. They're all, most of them are coming in too.
You're talking about hauling off the sludge in the bottom of these lagoons?
No, septic tanks from homes out in the county in different areas that don't have a means of disposing.
What happens to our lagoons?
That's where it ends up.
And it just stays there?
Yeah, I mean,
have more lagoons?
It can get biodegraded some, but yeah, you're having an impact on your system, and that's exactly what we're talking about figuring out.
Okay. Matters, Brian, but they all have systems, so they're taking in the people. It goes on everywhere. We need to know, do we have the right facility? Does it need upgraded there? It looks pretty hokey. What would that cost to upgrade it?
Right.
What are we taking in? How many gallons? And what should the price be to cover all of it?
And it is a permitted use in our wastewater permit.
Sure.
We have in our permit, it's just like a water, right? It's an amount we're allowed. I think it's 250,000 gallons of septage per month that we can take into our wastewater plant.
What are you at now?
We get real close to that in the summer with this hauler coming.
Yeah,
get
more. Yeah.
That's without any industry or anything.
I think you should be doing it, you said automated, not doing it by hand.
And
there's some
if you compare your labor cost to automation, which should be done somewhere in the study, and what it costs us to make it automated. I used to run a Vactor truck, and there was a lot of manual labor in that, but we found ways to make it a lot easier on the employees.
Yeah. We've designed a few septage receiving stations for wastewater facilities, and there are some excellent designs for making it to where they show up, dump, and they leave, and and it'll process itself, and Scott doesn't have to get down there.
I think we need to have, so we're not putting into shovels, into plastic garbage cans, lifting because, you know, there's syringes, there's all kinds of stuff in all of this. And that's what we got to get away from. And like I say, you all need to go out there, because if you go out there, you'll be... It only took me one trip.
Haven't been back since.
He remembers it well.
I've been to Lane County's facility because we utilize that to back your truck.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, that'll be looked at as well, the wastewater site. I want to talk briefly about rates real quick, and then we'll be done. But any questions about the studies and what the intent is and what we're doing?
Another reason I'd like to know how much capacity we have there, we talked about this whole idea that we about moving the effluent into the new land from that the BLM gave us, which is how far about?
Not quite a mile.
About a mile, you know, east. You have deeper soils.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it'll, you know, obviously work better with all your whole nitrate issue here, and that's been talked about for years, is to go out there. But what I started asking here, you know, was, well, once we get, well, when we'll get into the rate study that you're going to be coming to, but then in the current studies that he's updating show moving out there. Okay, so then our rate study guy took that, saying, well, this is what Lapine, the districts, of course, this is what they said you need here. The group, the board, they had engineers, they studied it. That's what they said you need to do. So the rate study guys, they don't get into that fight because they're saying these guys have decided you. They take those numbers and plug them in. Well, when we plug in moving it east, it has a tremendous impact on your monthly rate because it's $1.5 million. $1.5 million over a small number of users.
Yeah.
So then that caused me to say at the meetings that we've been having during the day, well, why are we moving east? In other words, since I've been here since 2010, on and off, I've been here twice, but, well, we're going east. You know,
are we sure?
We're going east? Why? Yeah. Who says we're going east? Other than everyone tells me that. Well, is the DEQ making us? No. Do we have an order to? No. Is our system not working out there where it is? Works just fine. Okay, so now this went from everyone believes we're just doing it, and we got the land from Congress to do it, but whoever actually looked at why are we doing it and who pays for it if we do it? Well, when you throw it in the rate study, it becomes very black and white. And then I said, and we looked at this, said, well, wait a second. We're going to go out here and charge everyone, and I don't remember the number now, but it's a bunch.
Yeah.
$5, $10, $20 a month increase in their sewer bill to replace something that's currently working.
If it isn't broke, don't fix it.
Well, it's deeper than that. It's the South County septic issues. It's all of that. Yeah. And so you have to stop to say, now let's all step back here. I know that everyone went to Congress to get this land given, and Ron Wyden, and they're here to cut ribbons, and it's talked about so long, it all becomes facts. But, you know, we better take a step back here and look at this.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that we might not need to do it in 15 years.
But can't we put a little bit away as we get it?
That's what this is all. But I think I'm trying to educate you is that the public here all just thinks, well, this is what we're doing.
Right.
And you've all just thought, that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second.
Well, I knew you were going, that it was going to be done in the future.
Well, but
not now. I knew it was going to have to at some point.
Why did most people think it's going to get done? But I'm trying to say is if this current system works, and we're not under order to do it, how do I... It can be done because, again, it helps the South County septic issues.
Right.
Then maybe the people who that's a big issue to need to help pay for that. They need to provide the $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Not the 600 users in Lapine.
At the time that we were going for that property, that was the only words that you could hear down here. It was nitrates in the groundwater.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You don't hear that now.
Yeah. See, that was the buzz of the day. So anyway,
well, you hear it every once in a while. So
they resurrect.
Yeah, I've got the latest information or something like that. Yeah.
So that's been interesting to me when you started to kind of look at this. Like, so I'd like to know if we've got plenty of capacity there. Now, if we were having to expand, and we were going to spend, but that pipeline is a bunch of money to go out there. And you know, just to get power out there and all those things.
Be expensive.
Yeah, and who pays for that? City residents.
Yeah, but as you said, if they're, you know, if we're projecting population to go from 1,500 to 5,000, can we still operate at 5,000? If that's a yes, then why on earth are we ever going to waste money going out there?
That's exactly what we'll figure out.
Yeah. I still think that...
Especially when we can turn around and take waste from them.
I still think that some money should be put aside for the future.
Yes, I do too.
You know, as a fund, say this is for later on. If we use it, fine. If we don't,
but I guess when you get into the rate study, you said earlier, it's how much do current people pay versus future?
Yeah, and what's fair on them?
That's why there's an SDC. No one likes SDCs. The theory of that is the SDC pays for that. Do we charge grandma for a line that we never need in 15 years? That's the dilemma. There's no easy answers to this.
Yeah.
And that's why you're all here.
You don't have to make it a huge amount. You're just real small, just to get it into the fund and start going, let it grow.
But take 600 customers. If everyone pays, if you say a little bit, but if you're only paying 25 now, $5 is a pretty good increase. So you just take $5, what's 5 times 600? 3,000? It's 36,000 a year. In 10 years, you've got 360,000. Of $1.5 million, but by then that's a $2 million project with inflation. And so $5 doesn't hardly get you there.
Then you go back to your organization, they're telling us we have to do that. Well, you give us the money.
Yeah. So $1.5 million projects to a small system. That's one of the things that hurts us. We're small.
Yeah.
It's that proportionally, and then it really gets us. It's
like,
the smaller the system, when you go run a mile long pipeline, it doesn't matter. The pipeline is serving, you know, in Bend or here, miles a mile. Costs the same to dig it.
Yeah, and you're stuck as a public entity with prevailing wages and all that. So, the last thing I want to chat real quick about is this is a funding table. It's one page out of several from the Infrastructure Financing Authority. The yellow line is Lapine, and you're in a pretty unique situation for some funding.
you don't like that,
what else?
Actually, it's good.
Yeah. Unique good?
Unique good, not unique bad.
That highlighted line down there, well, let me explain this.
You got an extra one for the mayor?
Oh, yeah.
The peanut gallery there.
Thanks.
They want to know what's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is the table that we get directly from the Infrastructure Finance Authority, and that's the state of Oregon that provides funding. If you go down to Lapine, you can see the key one is to go to fourth one from the right. It's called the Affordability Index, and it's 1.25% of your median household income. It's $30.15. Now, what that number is, that's the monthly cost for water or sewer or both that they require you to get to.
Sorry.
God.
Come on, Jimmy.
I know I've got something.
Yeah. That usually happens to me, so I'm glad it was somebody else. Anyway, that's the monthly rate that you're required to get to before you become eligible for grant funds. And what's really attractive to Lapine, and you see the column just to the right that has 0.0 under what's called the LSIMD, that's a wrong number. There's a new table out about your block grant eligibility. And Lapine is block grant eligible. Now what that means, it's a community development block grant. And they have between $2 to $3 million in grants they can give you per utility for improvements, but you have to get to that rate to qualify. And you can just raise your rates and get there, but generally what that means is if you have capacity in your rates, you'll have to get some kind of a loan to get to there, then the grant will trip in. Now, as an example, your water is currently, and Scott, correct me if I screw these up, but it's currently $27.34 for 3,600 gallons. And the state figures that $30 on 7,500 gallons. So if you add in your overage use in water, you're at 35 roughly. So you're already above the threshold. So for your water system, you're pretty set to qualify for some significant grants to do some improvements, which is fantastic. Now your sewer, on the other hand, is at 24. So you can see you're about $6 low for sewer to qualify for some grants. But the point of this, and this information will be included in these studies, is you're in excellent position to get significant grants. So if you do have some improvements that result from the study, you might, especially on the water side, you're already there, you might be able to get some done with very little rate increase. The sewer looks like it might require a little bit of a rate increase, but which is a great situation. A lot of cities aren't there. They're, you can see, you know, there's this one page goes from Haines to Lowell, so there's all these other cities. And you can look up above the $30, you can see some cities, you know, if you jump up to Island City or Irrigan, they're at 52 and 55, and Ione's at 58. You know, some of these cities with higher incomes have to get clear up in the 40s, 50s, and 60s before they qualify for grant funds. So you're in a good situation due to your low median household income. We will verify this and obviously get the latest numbers and make sure it's on the latest information in the study, but I wanted to paint that picture for you. You're in a pretty good situation, which is great. If you can secure a $2.5-3 million grant, then potentially that project out east might not actually cost much if that's what shows you should do.
This makes you eligible.
Yeah, makes you eligible.
So all these other places, lots of them are eligible too. I mean, what I'm being told is that, as you know, I mean, the grant money is getting tighter and tighter.
It
so,
is.
You know, so I mean, I don't want to paint any picture that this is going to suddenly get us the majority of this in grants.
No,
it
could.
Because the state told me that. Yeah. Israel could, but all these other places are applying. I mean, we're not. I mean, I think you have to be careful with that.
It's not everybody's applying, but it's always maxed out. The block grant program takes applications 4 times a year, and they usually get to the second or third round, and then their money's gone.
I think we'll get some block.
You will. I think you will too.
We will, definitely. Yeah. But there's going to be a whole lot of loan.
Yeah, whatever it takes to get up to the threshold. And it's hard to know, too, what the number will be. Obviously, after the study, hopefully it's not a huge, huge improvements that you need. But if it's smaller and within these thresholds, you might get away with less of a rate increase. But, you know, that'll all be figured out as a study and working with you. You're in a great situation. Rick's got a good point. It's definitely still competitive, and you're in the hunt with others. And a lot of people are after it. So, but they do fund a lot of projects. So.
And the pool of eligible people has gotten a lot smaller. I think with the new data, I think there's 49 communities in Central and Eastern Oregon that have become ineligible now. So
yeah,
the grant dollars are less, but the competition is
less. Because they're not charging enough.
Yeah, well, they're doing it in a strange manner. I'll leave you a copy of this table. And we still don't understand how they're doing the eligibility, but that's not our job. But it has, they have dropped off some communities. So the fight is a little less for that money. But bottom line is with your low median of the household income and your block grant eligibility, you're in a better situation for grant assistance than others. There's no doubt about it.
So what he's saying, just to make sure you're clear, is that that they're saying is because of our income, you have to charge $30.
Yeah, to qualify.
To even qualify, because what they're really saying is, if you were charging $24, even if you're low income here, you're charging below what they think is a minimum you should be charging. And I think no one's going to tear up for you.
Yeah, right.
As they're saying is, you could go out and charge $5 a month as a city and then say, but we want all grants because we're broke. What they're saying is, well, yeah, you're broke because you aren't charging anything.
Right.
So they have taken our income and said, you could be charging $31. And if you won't charge that,
you won't get a grant.
We won't even let you apply.
Right.
So the days of our $24 stuff, what do you think that really tells you, are over?
Yeah.
But
would that fund the expansion in the Cable neighborhood?
No. You're not going to get 100%.
No.
No way.
No, just because you do have to raise sewer rates to get to the eligibility already.
So then you go to 30 to become eligible, and you'll have some money. But it's your operational costs and all the other things, and so, that's the rate study thing we'll get into a little bit. That's coming, no, you won't have any $30 rates under any scenario, with or without Kegel, when you look out down the road.
Your increase will definitely be less with the grant funds, if you can get them, obviously.
So are those grant funds matching?
The block grant program will give you a straight grant with no matching if your rates are there.
Yeah,
but
rates are there.
Yes, there's plenty of cases where cities have gotten funded with straight grant if their rates are already there.
Yeah.
But again, it's everybody's after those dollars, so you have to get in the hunt and go after them.
Yeah.
So it's possible, but Rick's point is there's going to be a loan component. Obviously, rates in the 20s anymore are unheard of. A lot of cities are paying in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So, but you're in a better situation than most with your income data.
Yeah,
this is big, bro. This is
good. Kind of.
The crystal ball part is going to be saturation of business and residential occupancy within the bounds of the city limits. That's going to have the greatest effect on what the cost is to maintain a system. Are we doing anything that?
I think what Wayne means is if all of it built out, where would you be?
Yeah,
within the city limits. And it would be interesting to look and say, based on the density and what this area would build, where would we end up? Assuming 2.5 people a home or 2.25, right, whatever the math shows. And then you'd come out with a population. My gut tells me, when you drive from the north area to the south area, there's so much land out there. It seems to me like a lot of homes could end up in La Pine, and your number could get very big. Have any studies been done to see how big you'd get if you filled everything up?
No, I don't think anyone's taken, you say fill everything up. But what you do is, the LCDC it's a 20-year planning look for, we have enough land for residential based on the projections of growth for 20 years. So then that's X amount of units. And, you know, I don't know that anyone's in calculating that into, but we have a probably, well, all they will say is we have a 50 plus year land supply, but they don't say it's 75, they just stop at 50. We could have a 100-year land supply.
There's your answer.
So we can't look at how much land we have in the city. No. We won't expand the boundaries of the city. Other cities will be expanding numerous times, and we will not be. So
we won't have to.
No, look, just the new neighborhood is around Crescent Creek, you know. That is designed, I want to say, 1,400.
Yeah, I think 1,450.
Is it from something like 1,400 wow. houses? Okay. If yeah, but if you grow, but if that's all, but if we add 10 houses a year, 15 houses a year, in 10 years that's 150. If you take 50, we do 20, 25 a year, in 10 years that's 250.
You know, you can have that.
In 20 years it's 500. I mean, you're out. And there isn't anybody that's going to be buying stuff now for anything when you get out like that. So, you know, we may have, if we had 10 or 20 houses in a year, that's actually a lot of growth. We have 16, well, we only have 600 accounts, and half a percent of those are commercial.
Close to
half are commercial. I mean, you have 2.5 people per house for 1,600 people. You really got to, you know, keep these numbers in perspective.
Yeah. So,
and you know, we don't have 1,000 houses. I mean, we got 800 or whatever. I don't know, less than that probably. So
at 20 a year, say really optimistically, at 20 years is what, 400 homes,
mm-hmm.
2.5 people a home, 1,000 people.
Yeah.
So you're at 2,800.
Is that a little faster growth that we want?
Well, it's not really wanting. Even fast growing, again, we're getting into the, but the fast growing places, if you take 10, 20 years, they average 2.5 or, I mean, you know, there could be a blip up at a 7 or 8. Redmond had a couple 8-year percent.
Yeah.
Then they also had some zeros.
Uregon and Island City both had some 4s, 5s, and 6s for 3 or 4 years in a row. And then it died off, but it made a big impact, you know, growing 5-6% a year for 4 or 5 years in a row.
But if we, this is the trouble with planning too fast of a growth, is because if we then say, hey, we're going to need this new water line in 10 years, we start pricing to have the money in.
Pretty hard on the existing users.
And yet in reality, it took you 20 to get there because you were overly optimistic. Then I can always pick my grandma. Grandma paid for it.
Yeah.
And grandma can't. And so you have to. It's
a balance. That's what we were talking about earlier about you can't build for 4,000 people and have 1,800 pay for it.
Yeah. I mean, in the last That's 5 tough. Years, we've had, what, three new houses built in probably 5 years. So, now, that was the bust. But I'll tell you, you've got to be careful if you start saying we're going to add 10 or 20 houses a year. You just can't do it because then is Ken paying? Is she paying? I mean, that's...
The nice thing is you try to find a reasonable amount of growth, and then if it actually does occur, you got that many more users to help pay for the next phase.
Right.
So you try to manage your growth in a reasonable manner. So.
I think probably wouldn't you say brand new ones? Since 2015? Where are they?
Habitat.
Well,
I was going to say Habitat for you right out there on its way.
But basically, it's
the two lodges got built.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah, it's just single family houses, and they're just really well. I mean, I was here in 2010, and we, as far as like say Habitat, but as far as just all market based people building a house. Pretty small.
See, it's just I'm looking at these numbers and trying to come up with what the cost to the user. If we just sit here and we said, well, people will eventually find us and they'll eventually come here one or two families a year or four families a year. That sets to me it sets a lot of things back, or it's gonna create such a huge cost per user, you know, are we doing anything to say, hey, folks, look, we're here, and come and join us, and
yeah,
we can offset the cost per person or per household, you know, and so it's, yeah. How much do we do on either side? If we want a nice system in here, and it's going to cost X number of millions of dollars, the other side is we've got to bring some income in here to help pay for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why we're working on economic development. Yeah. Our 12 o'clock meeting today is economic development. You know, so, yeah, if that's a priority, you have to kind of, what you're saying, you have to grow a little or you go backwards.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the trouble with any of the outlying communities around Bend is you're dependent on, in a lot of ways, you're dependent on Bend's growth. And if Bend has to grow, its prices have to go up, and then it works its way out. And you know, right now, Bend's prices are kind of been going up. But you know, the prices, you know, I mean, the prices in Bend dropped a ton, and pretty soon, and ours even got so low, it just mathematically didn't work out. Now Bend's are back up $100,000 on a lot. Then our lots become more. They say, "Whoa, I can drive the 28 miles, yeah, and I'm willing to drive over 4,000 foot elevation in Lava Butte." But because of, I can have a $500 a month less house payment. Yeah. But when all things are fairly equal, a lot of people choose other places.
Right.
And Madras fights that, Prineville fights it, Culver fights it. It's not saying anything about Lapine. You know, Redmond fights it. Redmond's growth stops when Bend gets cheap.
Yeah.
It's, don't you mean? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, it's just hard to say, well, why is that? But it is a fact. Sisters, he works in Sisters. I mean, Sisters had went to nothing for a few years, that growth, when the prices dropped. And Sisters is obviously a little bit, quite a bit different community, demographically. But, so
the key to address what you're talking about there is if you have improvements that you need and you're grant eligible and you can get a grant and you have to raise rates enough to get the grant, you set the project right there at the cap of that. You know, why do more than the minimum amount you need to get the grant and get the grant, and then that'll get you so far into the future.
Right.
And then that way you're not getting an excessive loan coupled with the grant to do things that go too far out. So, and the study.
This is your job, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We work with him.
Okay.
Try to.
We got somebody pointing a finger at.
Well, yeah. Well,
that's why. Yeah.
Yeah. It ain't his fault. I don't know what it is. But yeah, that's the key: is to make it affordable, but yet get you far enough in the future that you get something, and you're still attractive to outside areas. You have infrastructure capacity, but you didn't overburden your existing users. It's a balance. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, but. That was it on the studies, and one other thing real quick, we're starting on the design of the Wiki uplift station.
Okay.
And our surveyors will be here, actually the surveyors are from Atkins Engineering in Cave Falls, but they'll be here Wednesday to survey that Wiki up area.
Okay.
And then we get going on design, and Scott and I and Brandon are going to meet either today or tomorrow, we'll figure it out. Relative to your maps and other things, and then we'll be at the council meeting tomorrow night as well. So, but any other questions for us here?
Any idea of what that design is going to entail?
For WikiUp?
Yeah.
Yeah, we came up with, a guy in our office came up with this great idea. I just tickled to death on the WikiUp lift station because one of the big issues was pulling in Kegel and other areas, the size of your pressure sewer from there to the lagoons was awful small. Jim and I were talking about that before. Came up with a way to use a different type of pump that can still get the flows done at that growth without replacing that transmission line, which saved serious amount of money.
$600 or $700.
Yeah, so that design is just getting underway, and assuming you want to build it this summer, that's something we need to work out. But it can happen real quick, and you can get that done, and it can no longer be a burden for Scott. But it's a slick system that'll bring that up to speed and be far easier for the city. Much more efficient, too. You know, it'll be a lot less power and be more efficient.
Yeah. we can maybe save a few hundred thousand if we take on cables. Yeah. You got a $5 million project, almost $1 million is a big number. So,
yeah.
And yet the other study showed that you had to build this pipe. So, you know, engineers look at things differently.
Yeah.
So these guys said, wait a second.
One thing to be aware of is that the ODOT's going to be paying for trenching about 2,000 feet from Wickia down this way. So,
well, we aren't going to be digging any pipe.
Yeah. But we might want to throw something in their trench, is your point.
Pipe is cheap, trenching is not.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
If the hole is already there.
That's good to know. What are they, is it for power?
For power,
okay.
For the overpass.
That's for the overpass going in.
Yeah. Yeah, there's separation requirements, but still, it's nice to know that there's a trench being dug and equipment and things of that nature. When is that project slated to go?
Spring of 17.
Spring is
okay.
They're supposed to be going out for bidding or something pretty soon.
Probably a year out on that.
Yeah.
It's only been in planning for 20, 25 years.
Yeah, don't want to rush.
We don't want to push.
Yeah.
You're now in sitting up.
There's no ODOT people in the room, so say all you want.
That's state.
Well, it's good to be here and meet some of you again.
Thank you.
Yeah, any questions?
Thank you.
Okay, great, thanks. We'll hang out for the rest of your meeting.
Okay, First Street Signalization Project.
Eric's here, and he's been helping us with that. And the bids are in, and all that fun stuff. So contractor's been selected, so I thought he could tell you, so people, you know, was ambassadors when it's really starting. You've seen the movements of the utilities.
Mm-hmm. So quick to begin, I guess that's for the wiring.
Yes. Yeah, Mid-State's out there working.
Mid-State was doing that.
Trying to get out of everybody else's way. Yep. Or into everybody else's way. We would be through there first.
Right.
So you may know that the the low bidder on the project was High Desert Aggregate and Paving, which is a firm out of Terrebonne. They do a lot of work around here. There were six bids on the project, and High Desert Aggregate's bid was actually approximately $200,000 less than the engineer's estimate for the project. The construction will probably get going within approximately about a month from now, and Then the contract documents indicate an ending date of August 14th of this year. So all work's supposed to be done by August 14th on that. Wanted to also mention we put together a landscaping and electrical plan to follow up the ODOT project with potential.
Right here, that might not be the most, but it's close.
Street trees and street lights to fill in those areas between the curb and sidewalk that are, the ODOT project is going to leave those areas just topsoil, so there would be a potential of coming back in and landscaping, putting in trees and the street lights. So that would include, it's approximately 30 trees and 15 street lights in that area. That's a fairly accurate representation of it right there on the wall.
And you know what street lights cost?
Yes, I do.
About 100, when you figure the wiring and everything, that part's probably over 100 grand.
Yeah, we came up with about 145,000 actually for the entire lighting system and all the street lights.
Why did the aggregate come in so much lower than expected?
Oh, I haven't looked at exactly which bid items are low, but the estimate for the project was approximately $1.7 million. High Desert Aggregate and Paving came in at $1,486,000. Then the next low bid was Knife River, and they're at $1,512,000. So not a whole lot more. And then the third lowest is Jowl out of Bend, and they're $1,542,000. So those three, the lowest bids, those were the local bids. The other three bids were from out of town, but those three were fairly close. It may have just been a case where ODOT's a little conservative on their estimate. So.
Yeah. Well, they like to estimate a little high, I think, to make sure they have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be coming. You're going to see more, and you know, so it'll be nice for the summer. People will see the construction, and then what we're working on is the landscaping side. I met with Gary Farnsworth and the folks at ODOT last week, trying to get some grant money out of them to help pay for our lights and some of that. So if not, we'll be on the hook and do it all or phase it somehow. But you get the lights, you kind of, you're pulling the wire. You got to do you can't go. It's pretty hard to go through and do five of them, and you know, so we'll end up doing, but I'm trying to get ODOT to cover the light side of it or come up with some of the grant money on that, because it makes it safer for pedestrians. It's in front of their facility. Half those lights are actually border their facility.
And they're lights.
So, you know, so anyway, I met with them, and we'll see. And so I got to write them a letter. They're going to hunt around. I think we'll find, they'll find some money. But in that, you know, we'll see on that. But then I guess what the plan would be probably is if depending on that, we would have someone. I don't think we'll have the contractor do that, because that's probably more cost more, isn't it? If
you have it like a design build and have a contractor.
Have the guy doing it, the job, they got the bid. We can go to him and say, hey, would you like to put in these street lights while you're there doing all of it?
Mm-hmm.
And get a price. You know, but the problem is 90% of that subbed out.
Yeah.
So there's no margin for him to do anything with, because he's hiring someone else to do it all. It's mm-hmm. pulling wiring's electrician, you know. So it might be easier for us, you know, just let them get out, kind of pretty much wrap up their part, and then our person comes in the you know, September, October, the fall, and does it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unlike here, this time we've designed it, we'll have a power meter, correct?
Yes.
Unlike here, we did is we pay a monthly fee to Mid-State, and we pay Mid-State to do these. Down there, there's a higher number of these, and they're all fairly tight, so we're actually going to have a power meter and pay a power bill. And Mid-State will not own and maintain those. The power bill is a lot less than we pay Mid-State. And that's the way you kind of get different places, you'll do it differently. If we're out on Huntington, you're spread out, it's easier to pay them to hook it up and pay them a monthly bill. But when you're kind of in there tight, it's easier to, and we have to run, we have to have power for our sprinkler system. So, you know, you end up with a 15 or 10, whatever your minimums are.
Yeah.
You're around, you know, all you got's a little, so you might as well use up that power. And so we'll run it all off of one meter. Is that the plan, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And ODOT will conduit for us.
You're not using the existing meter there on the sewer?
They've engineered it all.
We looked very closely at that. However, the distance from the lift station there coming around the intersection and going south was over 1,700 feet, and the voltage drop for that length of wire made it so you're all... Too large a wire. It was going to, the increase in cost related to the size of the wire was more than simply just setting a new meter base. So that's how that analysis turned out.
Okay. So that's come along. You know, look for that. But you know, it's expensive. Everything is.
Everything is.
When it gets to your point, I think when people come into town and see a well-landscaped intersection in every other town, it works pretty good. I mean, you've got a traffic signal. It's all cleaned up, tidied up with curbs and sidewalks and street trees and lights. It does make people start to notice. They'll say, Coyle Pines looking good. And then they're going to say, they see the industrial park sign. That, you know, it really is that basic. They start to kind of notice your town.
Mm-hmm. There's also in the plans, a lot of signage is going to get done over this, so it's it'll be something we don't have, and like Rick says, people see signs and you know they understand, and it looks good. So curb appeal,
and then they're starting on the they're just getting ready to start working on the, what year is the in between fill? That's about 2006. The STIP project is 2000.
Right. That should be in 16.
So they got to start studying. So then theoretically, what we do would be filled in depending on the money, and they're a little. We've got to work with them to find more money for that. And they're paving. What's interesting I found out, I mean, this tells you how costs go up, whether you like it or not. So when they pave a road now, and these are, no, God didn't hand these down. These are man-made rules. I always remind people of that when I say, you know, these weren't handed down with the Ten Commandments. So when people don't like them, I say, well, they can't be changed, but boy, you never can find anything. Well, no, we can. I always wonder, what do you mean? Somebody made them. They can't be changed. But when you pave a road, it has nothing to do with sidewalks, curbs, nothing. It's simply repaving a road. The requirement now, probably fed and handed down to the state, is that if you have the sidewalks that have nothing to do with the paving job, don't meet ADA standards, they have to be included in the project. So they're going to repave the road from where it stopped the four lane out here, or basically State Park, or somewhere this way, and they're going to clear down here to the highway to Reno. Mm-hmm. For all out, you know. Mm-hmm. But in town here, they are going to have to, the grant we have is for this side, the west side. Well, now, they're going to have to go in and fix up some things on the east side and put in ADA ramps up and down all those corners because they're paving the road. And the money they have allocated is just for road pavement. And now they got to find money or they can't pave the road. And so I said, well, that's kind of good. I mean, it'll turn out. Because our sidewalks over there are pretty bad. But then you get into, they also don't want to get into the full streetscape. But so do you want to go repair things and then you tear them out in a few, you know? So I'm hoping we can get to where maybe they can find enough to almost do it fairly nice. But anyway, that's what they're working on.
Well, remember that it was 200,000 less than what the engineer estimated for that.
Well, that's one, that's a signal.
Rick, just an example, go down to Gilcrest. And Crescent, just look what they did there. That rule applied, as mm-hmm. I understand, mm-hmm. as they went through Gilcrest and paved it, look what they did on both sides. So it wound up being just as cheap, or they were into it, to put small sidewalks. They did their own deal there, yes. But they had to put in curbs and mm-hmm. ADA stuff down there, and that's why you got that whole strip through town that looks new. I'm holding my breath and crossing my fingers about, as I talk to them regular about the east side of the road, 97 getting done, just saying, okay, do it. And finding the money to do that, enhance or fix it or...
Enhance grants. Of course, then it pushes us a little because then, if, like, they're not going to put up street lights. So if you don't put up the street lights and run the conduit when they're doing it, mm-hmm. then you don't want to be jackhammering anything up. And so it can force us, so we'll have to continue allocating a decent amount of money for the next few, you have to look at it a little bit. We're gonna have, between all three projects, almost 20 million at Wikia, the paving job,
oh, yeah.
the sidewalk job, and the intersection, you know, you got $25 million or better coming in here in this little town, and we have to move pipes, and we just have to allocate. So if you sometimes wonder, is you wonder why we don't meet, well, we can meet to just talk about, it's fun to meet, but to agree, our agenda is set. Mm-hmm. It just is, because that millions are coming in, and it forces us to do things. You know, like on this project, you know, we're moving fire hydrants and all of that. And we have to pay for it. Well, the same thing's happening out at Wikia. We got pot water and sewer lines in the way. It's $100,000 to move this. It's not optional. We have to move it. Mm-hmm. So if Doug doesn't like it, Doug wants it, so it don't matter. It has to be done. And so our flexible money, really, for a few years is spent, I think. You know, grants aren't free. You know, today, I don't know if the mayor gave me this one or someone on, there's a road grant, you get up to $50,000. Well, again, you know, you have to do things with it. We just rather, we don't qualify anyway, but you know, yeah.
You gotta look at the long-term project of what you're gonna do to make it feasible for yourself for the future.
You know, we got to set aside, you know, 100 grand a year for a few years for these projects, because we got about 5 years of them. Mm-hmm. So.
That's what I was saying earlier about these funds that have been set for four projects like this, four for major repairs. Like you were saying earlier, if you had one pipe break down there from the well, and this city doesn't have any water for a couple of days, you're going to be seeing some power. A lot of power.
Scott says that's not happening.
They won't blame him.
He's out of vacation.
He's a big guy. He can handle it.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, discussion on water and sewer rate study.
Just, you got my email on the old flyer. How many of you think you can come?
This is on Thursday?
It's not, it's like the
29th.
Yeah. If you can come, we'd like you to come, but you do need to call in to Patty or email. We'd like to see you come. Are you coming?
Yeah.
Okay, and you try to stay for the whole time if you can, just because it'll be, I think you'll find it interesting, and we'll have the Planning Commission and everyone down here. So I've tried figuring out this, how we're going to set up, because we run off this screen a lot when they do this, and there's lots of numbers and charts, and he'll try to get it down to where it's understandable, you know, kind of in a, because there is a lot of, well, there's so many you can't even see them.
Yeah. We're going to have to resize some charts to put them on.
Yeah, so they're going to get it down to kind of a presentation level. Onto what, and so we're going to learn about, you know, what our current costs are, what if, what's kind of with what projected costs take when they are taking the master plans we have, so those can be updated later if we need to, but again, you got to take the plans that we have, and kind of we did some best guesses on that, and we redid some growth rates, and then they'll be able to kind of tell you based on all of that, you know, what things will be. And then there's really two parts. Remember, we're talking about going then to more of a flow-based sewer and water from the EDU-based. So you're doing two things. One is you're looking at the cost of our system if we do nothing to keep it like it is. And then if you go to a flow-based system from EDUs, so you kind of get a double whammy, because maybe we have to go up 5 or 10% on one if we do nothing anyway, and then you throw in a new system, that changes it. It moves around who pays. And it seemed like, which one was more, which one had the more changes that are kind of dynamic. And then we also have to figure in what cable would do based off of the former engineer's projections. You know, if he can save us $1 million, even if you get a couple million in grants, you know, that all lowers it, but
the water was pretty straightforward. The sewer changes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you get in some multi years and some of these. If you know, do some of the way we had some scenarios where 10-15% a year increase, 2 and 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row, and you know, so you start to kind of see. But the other side of that is, and why I think you're going to find it interesting, is how it affects the commercial. We've talked a lot for the last couple of years about the commercial subsidizes residential here, and the study shows it graphically. Grandma's bill is probably $5 or $10 a month lower than it should be right now if you did nothing, if you wanted to make it fair. So then when you talk about why businesses don't want to come, maybe it's because of our high rates. Well, they are paying for grandma. Now, the businesses tend to live somewhere else. And where does grandma live?
Here.
Here.
She votes.
And grandma votes. And grandma writes letters. And grandma has friends. That's the dilemma. And the tough part of this, and this is what boards like you and city councils, and that's one reason there's actually a big Ben that has three new councilmen. I mean, but our fiduciary responsibility is we're not the federal government, we can't deficit spend. So the council will have some interesting things ahead, you know, because graphically it shows you that the commercial businesses are paying this. So do you equal it, or do you look the business in the eye in the Chamber of Commerce when a business says, "Why am I paying too much?" They have to be able to say, "You are." Because you're helping pay for the residential.
But that's pretty characteristic in almost any city, Rick.
Well, yes and no. In Bend, they found that the residential was carrying a bunch of the commercial.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it just depends on how it was set up. And sewer's different than water. And what the study shows here is our biggest... it's a philosophy, and that's where the mayor and the council and all of you, and I'm excited to hear your talk, discussion, because what do you want it to be? My guess is it'll be one of these things you maybe make better, but maybe you can't. That
may not be perfect, but
yes,
you try to improve it.
You try to improve it, and you try to kind of phase, but they're very good at this. They've got that, and they can hit buttons and change it all up, and it's I think it's fascinating.
That's a neat part. Hopefully that comes with the presentation, is you can change one number. You could change, you know, we think it's going to grow 0.5% instead of 0.7% in population, and it goes all through the thing and shows you what your end result is.
Yeah, and your rates kind of are, when you set rates, it's set, you know, for everyone. I mean, however you fall in there, you fall in. And what you find is our top couple, two or three or four users save a lot. Thousands. But those users are fairly large and distant from us. And there is no method, to just impact, because you could say, well, gee whiz, we don't care about them. Well, that don't work that way. So see, when you try to balance it, it's a real, we've sat here with our jaws dropped and like,
The more we fill up the business park, the more grandma's grandchildren are going to come to work.
That's
there.
Correct.
And they're going to pick up a portion of that bill, so grandma doesn't have to pay that big a chunk. So, and they're going to have to build homes.
Yeah. And in fact, you weren't working, the sisters went through this last year, a couple years ago. They had a big battle. You weren't working there then, I don't think. But if you go back in the bulletin, you pull up the fights in Sisters over water rates. And, you know, it's because the public, no one likes the message.
Sometimes you have to swallow it.
That's the, you know, our water rates here have been set, they're the original. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have 14 years, 13, 15, whatever, when you start working on a frozen rate. What's inflation in 10, and during that boom?
Oh, yeah, at least 1 or 2% a year over that whole period.
So you then that requires,
yeah. The only problem is doing it, you know, like you're saying, grandma doesn't want to pay that $5 a month. If they had done it right from the start, and it's maybe a few pennies here, a few pennies there, and then gradually worked their way up so it's not a shock all at once. Now it is going to be a shock all at once. There's no getting around it.
That's
the problem.
Yeah.
If nothing increased along with inflation, you're somewhere along the line, that increase is huge.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, one thing the consultant will tell you, he says, boy, you know, if they need to go up a percent or a percent and a half, you know, power company probably does it that way. You know, you don't just freeze them for 10 years. I mean,
if we were to charge what it costs to serve each customer without charging for the power, our base charge would be $36, $40 bucks.
Yeah.
And who wants to pay that?
Right.
And the interesting other kind, you know, you engineer types know this. One of my fascinating things to me was the meter size issue.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we get Bill Saunders, you know, was on our board here, and he always talked about his high water rate. Well, that subdivision has...
They've got 3/4 inch meters, and everybody else in town has 5/8 inch, or 5/8 by 3/4 inch. I wouldn't think that eighth of an inch would be that much, but it's...
It makes a lot of difference in the amount of water that goes through it. And what, because I always thought, well, you know, a shower is a shower, I guess, if it takes, you know, I mean, it's, to me, I'm thinking the dishwasher uses the same amount of water. I don't get if it's a 3-inch meter, my dishwasher can only hold so much water. I mean, you know, naively, that's what people, well, when you really get, these guys are good, you talk to them, well, but then, you know, maybe you're going to water your lawn for 2 hours, but the fact is, more gallons come out. And you're, you know, when you do this throughout a day and a month, you actually use more water. So when they take if you take a subdivision of 5/8 meters and 1 3/4 meters, the average monthly use in the place of the 3/4 meter is a bunch more. Right. So you pay more. And you put more of a burden on the system because you demand more water. We have to have bigger pipes coming in. We need more water rights. They use more water. So then they have to pay more. So that's where your complaints come from. But the districts just, or the subdivision, when no, now, see, we wouldn't now, I'm going, well, we wouldn't let anyone put in 3/4. I mean, they need to know it up front. So 5/8 is what probably Huntington Woods has. Mm-hmm. But that area, what's it, Wheeler Ranch?
Wheeler Ranch, yeah.
That area over there, when they did it, they put 3/4 in. And probably no one cared, no one thought about it. And the districts might have went about 100 3/4 meters and had them on the shelf, and when they had new houses, they just stuck them in.
Well, that's part of that is what, when I started here, the developer built, there were no subdivisions in town in 04 when I came here. Or they were just finishing them up.
They were starting.
And the developer put in the meter, and then you got meters that maybe they were buying them secondhand meters or rebuilt meters because they could get them cheaper, you know. It was hard to get a uniform anything out of the meters, and so we just went to a policy where, okay, you build your subdivision and then the district comes and puts in the meter. So it never happened after that because we were the ones actually putting the meter in. They put the setter in the box and then we'd go set the meter in the box. But before that, you might have, it was kind of potluck. You got almost anything out of there.
Well, I was on a water district board in Eugene, River Oak Water District, and we had different size meters for residential, small business, and large business. And didn't they, I know it's hindsight now, but didn't they go back and see or survey what other water districts did in regards to meters?
Well, and like you say, that they're the developer, I don't know why they chose to put in 3/4.
Okay, but it's hindsight now.
Yeah, they're certainly not cheaper.
No.
But, yeah, but maybe that construction guy found a cheap source.
That, yeah, that could
and help. See, because our rate system then didn't matter.
Yeah,
there what,
the house was a house.
Yeah, and under these new, and what every other city pretty much does is you have a base rate is based on your meter size.
Right.
So maybe my minimum is 20 bucks, he's a fake number, but that's for a 5/8. But my minimum on a 3/4 is 30 bucks. Stu has a 1-inch meter in his house over here. Well, he doesn't need a 1-inch meter. Who knows why that got there? Well, he's now up. Well, his minimum is quite a bit more than the 5/8. It has nothing to do with how much water you use. That's your minimum.
2.5 times the minimum.
Are we changing any of these meters, or are we leaving them in?
Well, with that... No, we're not. Again, you can't go around and we can't go around and pay for this. That's up to them. Now, if I told Stu the other day, he said, when this is done, you may want to go do it yourself. You may pay to have it done because you don't need a 1-inch meter trap. Mm-hmm.
Stu's the only one that can afford a 1-inch.
That could be true. You see, it's interesting, isn't it?
Well, and I'm not going to complain about this little amount that comes out of my sink anymore either, then, my faucet.
You're on the hook now.
It's education. I learned a lot because I really like it. So anyone that wants to come enjoy that 4 hours, you know, I sat through it in Bend for 4 or 5 hours with the city of Bend and their staff and their council, and it is interesting. And of course, the winners and the losers all start trying to calculate where they fit on that. And you have to kind of, you know, it's like it's there, but you also have to kind of, you know. So what we'll probably do is categories. What we're not going to do in here, for a lot of reasons, you're not going to see 400 people's water bills.
We're not naming names.
You're not going to see those because you really can't. So we'll have different categories, and you will have to, you know, but everyone sits in strength.
Wow, yeah.
because we all like a rate structure that increases my neighbor and reduces me, and that's just the preference.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about on the meter sizes, the ones that are complaining about paying more than the other ones, if they, I don't know what the meters cost, but if you can project out to them, if you pay for it now, this is how much, this is when you're going to be paid back. It's going to be even at this point. From that on, you're saving money. Mm-hmm. And point it out to them for them to do it.
We could come up with a program for people to change out. Say, okay, for you know, $500, what does that cost? $500, we will change out your meter. And you know, like you say, maybe it's a 5-year payback or 3-year.
Right, whatever it is. This is how long it's going to take to get to break even on this. But after that, you're going to be saving this money.
Yeah.
And get it across that way.
Give people some options.
Right.
Yeah, but we, you know, there's one business that's got like a 4-inch that doesn't. I mean, I'm like, how in the world can it need a 4-inch? And they're one of my ones who's called me numerous times and complained. And you know, I've heard they're going bankrupt, maybe. And you know, I'm thinking, well, if it's that business or company, if I was taking that thing over, I'd be swapping that baby down to 2-inch meter. I mean, a 4-inch meter around school. And we're not talking about school. So why would they have a 4-inch? You know,
this is where you can show them out. This is what you do this now. This is what you're going to save later.
Yeah, it's going to be easier to sell if they're going bankrupt that way.
Let the next
our money in there.
Yeah. Oh well, we're not putting our money. No, they would have to, but, So, be here. If you can, sign up, though, because I want to get the body cam. And it will be a public meeting, because the council will be here, and, you know, so it's public and all that.
Did I mention at the beginning that there was a $5 contribution for everybody whose phone went off?
Oh, I brought you snacks.
The listener rep will be reused one more time. That'd be a $10.
Other issues of concern, Stan? Public comments, Ken?
Well, will we have to do anything with our TSP with the signal and a rearrangement down there at the...
Our TSP is only year and a half old, so hopefully we aren't doing anything to it for a while. Okay. You always like faint, right?
I just want...
No.
And that may be in it already.
Well, no, it is in the TSP.
Okay.
That signal's in it.
Okay.
I think you update those 5 years, too.
Any other comments from staff?
Scott's putting in a couple concrete barriers at the end of Cagle, right? Mm-hmm. Looked at it. Kind of like we did Huntington Meadows. If you get over into the Cagle area, the railroad has a road, kind of a service road that runs along the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great place for people that have no business being there to be there, because it allows them to get behind things and do things and leave Wickiup Junction and go down a non-public road, and there's just, like say, probably not many good reasons to be there. And then the cops get in a chase and they come sliding in and out of there. So I went down, the neighbor on the corner had called me, and so I went down and looked at it and said, boy, that'd be a good application. So Scott's been out, we're gonna put two or three, I don't know how many.
Yeah, probably three.
So when you come down the end of Cagle, you head toward the tracks.
That's at the end of Cagle.
You will hit a concrete barrier, and you got a fence on the one side the guy's putting up, nice guy in the corner, and then the other side's just, it's dense trees. You can't wiggle around it because you have to go through the guy's front yard and through his boat and everything
else.
Once
they do that too, that's beside the point.
Yeah. So people can walk, we'll leave gaps, you can ride bikes and walk and use it as a bike trail, but it'll keep you, if you get on it down there at Wickiup, then you're going to go north a ways. I don't know where you come out at.
You go all the way up to Pinecrest.
So you won't get on it near as much because you can't get off it. Mm-hmm. And that just stops this running around. That's not a road. It's not a public road. It's a private Burlington Northern Access or UP Access Road.
They go through all the BLM fences. They just destroy those fences. Hmm. All the barbed wire fences up there all down.
He got his white truck. We got a new.
We got one and should have another
truck.
This week.
See, we'll see a new pickup truck. We have our 30-year-old. We're going to surplus a bunch of stuff out there. We've got them in piles. You know, they've got the pickup trucks with flat tires and been sitting around there for years. But their trucks are all, what years?
89, 86, 94.
So
they're old.
Yeah, we're getting, so we're getting new, our logos on, Save the Pine, Public Works, all that kind of stuff, new nice lights that are bright because we're out on the road doing stuff for Public Works now. And you're talking about taking the old truck, the one old truck, putting the snow pile on it permanently is what they were saying, maybe.
Yeah.
So we won't put the little lift. So take one, you can keep it chained up kind of, and then four, the 2.5, 2-ton or whatever. So that's coming, or well, one's here.
Yes, we're very appreciative of that.
I guess that's all. I mean, there's always lots of things.
Any other comments?
Yes. You got a water problem there just west of Ashton Eaton Parkway on 3rd Street, just south of Ray's. Big water problem when it thaws. You took care of the one down on Huntington. Is there any thoughts of doing that one there by Ray's? Because I've been by there and one lane of traffic basically is inundated with water.
No, I mean, it's not on, you know, it's not on anything right now. I think what happens with these things is when you do one, you just move to the other one.
No, this has been just like that before you did the other one.
Well, I know that. No. They're in front of the post office. They're everywhere. So, I mean, I'm just saying they're all over.
Okay.
And so what it is you know, the highest priority was the one that was done, and it takes several years of kind of raising its visibility, raising people's awareness, and climbing up the political food chain. And so another one, if that's it, I mean, others here, if that's the next one, then it'll start rising up that political food chain.
Okay.
And the county, you know, they put a, you know, 200-some thousand into that, you know, then they got to run over to Sisters and do one, and they got to run out east to Redmond to do one, and, you know, they go to Lower Bridge, and so, you know, it doesn't all come to La Pine, and so we'll have to just see. It's not been talked about, though, I can tell you. It's not, I mean, anecdotally, maybe.
I had a conversation with Chris Doty from county, and it's on their mind at the post office. I'm just talking about the post office.
Yeah.
They're very aware of it, and he said that it's on their mind. Whatever that meant.
Well, I was just kind of surprised it wasn't encompassed with the.
They didn't come on further.
They didn't come down another 350 feet.
They ran out of money. They did leave a provision in the last manhole on 3rd Street to go further. There was just no funds.
I see. Okay. And I don't know where that water drains. I'm assuming there's a curb drain there and should go into a little lagoon, but I'm not sure where.
Oh, you mean what's under it now?
Yeah.
There's nothing there, man.
No.
No, the one there by Ray's.
Yeah, there's nothing in there now.
Oh, there's nothing in
nothing.
It. Okay.
We need a good four-wheel drive pickup sales lot out here. Let everybody buy four-wheel drives, and then you don't have four.
I noticed that. I noticed that after the other one drained, and I looked up there and I thought, oh, you know, it's that, and that's what it's a little bit like the highway with the ADA thing. It's where do you start? Where do you stop? Because we have a drainage problem all over, and it's you know,
we took care of the two biggest ones. That was that first and third. Those are the worst ones. The other ones are high end.
We are doing something exciting, and Eric's kind of working for the guy, but we're going to take the blue house on Huntington, and that will be kind of our first kind of fit our TSP to how it should be, because that the blue house there, I don't know what the address, but it's the house that's...
Between 3rd and 4th.
Because it used to be a house, and it's just been vacant for a while, right across from the property management company.
Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of borders behind Brian Earl's place. But anyway, that's it's a commercial zone. It obviously used to be a house. Well, someone's bought it. They're going to convert that into offices, and it'll be nice. But the thing is that there we met, and Eric's working for him on that for the guy doing it. And so we met, and we'll end up with, if it plays out right, I'm assuming it's headed that way. So, Yeah, so they'll be submitting a site plan and everything. So we're going through the whole site plan process, but it'll have the, you'll actually have some on-street parking is the plan. We hopefully, so there'll be like three parking spots. So the curb that you see now or where the edge is, it's going in how many feet?
Seven
feet. Okay. So, and that's kind of where you would have that once, if you look out over a decade or two, Huntington will become like a more downtown Sisters or something where you have a couple, three parking spots, then it bulbs out. And, you know, you'll make it pedestrian friendly and all of it. And so,
is there going to be a snow plow nightmare?
Mm-hmm. A little plow snow into it. I mean, when it snows, I mean, you can't, it's got an edge now. It's just, it's over 7 feet.
I understand that. Having run snow plow for many years, when you get into those configurations.
I doubt that they'll configure into those very much. I mean, I think snow plow just head down Huntington.
Use it for snow storage.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, you know, those times of year, you know.
I mean, that's what we did in Lane County, so. Mm-hmm.
That's probably what will happen on those days. Mm-hmm. But the neat thing is the sidewalks will be, they're going to go to 8 feet, and then also you'll have street trees. The grates, street trees come out of the sidewalk with the grates, so I think everyone will like it. And that will be done by summer.
Not exactly.
Okay, I've got a question. I asked Scott, and he didn't know anything about it. Coming south on 97, as you pass Burgess and 97 on the right-hand side, coming south on 97,
okay,
by Burgess, mm-hmm, on the right-hand side, about 100 yards down, we used to have a welcome to La Pine sign. There on those poles. You remember that, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I do.
Where is it? It's gone.
Haven't the faintest idea.
You got any idea, Rick, where it went?
It was up.
All that's there is a couple of posts.
It was up this summer, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, because it was up.
It's been recently, last month or so, it disappeared.
Did the chamber take it down to repair it? Or?
Well, wasn't anything wrong with it, but I guess
it. Is it in the weeds? Did it blow down?
No, it's not.
I went by it one time, it was laying on the ground. Now where it's at now, I have no idea.
It's gone.
Yeah. It was like one part just broke.
Well, maybe there. What's her name, that sign lady has it. No, I have no idea.
Maybe you ought to call it chamber and ask if they took it down.
I'll send an email right here. I don't know who owns the sign.
That's from the chamber.
Yeah.
They put those signs up years and years and years ago.
Of course, they may be coming down for the construction because ultimately, you know, they're going to be digging and putting roads in and doing all that in there. So, but I don't think they've started to take signs down. So I'm assuming it's.
Well, I do know that they were repairing one here a couple months back, 3 or 4 months back. So
yeah, I'll ask Ian, where's that?
Well, the other thing too is they put that Wikita bypass on. That sign, nobody's going to see it, so people who already live here.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't do any good to be there.
But we have an ODOT sign that says La Pine, 2 miles.
I think ultimately you're going to want a new welcome type sign out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
One of these dark, cold, dreary nights, that 2 mile sign's going to disappear.
Good.
You won't know who to blame at all.
Go ahead. My parole officer won't let me out after dark.
And I know her too.
Any other comments before we adjourn?
There, I just said this to Ann. It's a good question.
Do I have a motion for adjournment?
No. I'll make it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Nobody opposes it.
Nobody wants to keep meeting.
No, nobody.